Are we ready?
I think so.
All right. I've got a few notes here to cover, and then we can see what develops. It's time for Talk Back. Talk Back is your opportunity to talk with us, communicate with us. We always welcome your emails. You can send them to comments@kaxe.org. You can send them to me personally by sending them to Jay Latimer. That's J-L-A-T-I-M-E-R at KAXE.org. You can write to us. Our address is 260 Northeast 2nd Street, Grand Rapids, Minnesota 55744. And you can always call our talkback line and leave the message in your own words. And that number is 218-999-9876. We heard from Mark, who lives up on Plantation Lake, and we had quite a go-to. He said he's talking about some plants on the road. He said the leaves are ultra-large maple leaf-like. They create a roof-like canopy 3 to 4 feet high. Underneath are raspberry-like berries that have a different texture, almost cloth-like. They taste okay. I can't remember if they had thorns, but I think not. And he says, you may have mentioned other plants like this recently on your show. The plant he is talking about is the thimbleberry. Now, if you are hiking the Lake Superior Trail this morning, you have ripe thimbleberries at your fingertips just about every step of the way. But here in Itasca County, and perhaps further to the west, I know next week I'm going to be away, and Harvey Jader's going to be filling this chair, and Harvey will be able to tell us if there are thimbleberries in the western reaches. But a few years back, I found some thimbleberries in Itasca County, and when I brought them in for identification, I was directed to harvest a plant, pull one up by the roots, and bring it in. It ended up at the University of Minnesota Herbarium because there was no record of thimbleberry in Itasca County. So the thimbleberry is, as Mark described it, it's got these great big leaves, these big maple-like leaves. I mean, I have a big hand. I can pick up a basketball with one hand. Not because I'm clever, but because I have a big hand. My hand is about the size of a leaf of one of these thimbleberries. They have these giant maple-like leaves. And the berries are, as Mark described them, cloth-like. they don't come off the stem the way a raspberry does. They're kind of a little bit difficult to separate. And as far as I can tell, maybe it's my old jaded taste buds, but they aren't especially tasteful to me. They're kind of bland, insipid, I guess. But other people I talked to some other folks over the weekend and talking about thimbleberries, and they enjoyed them very much. They find them quite delectable. I think a raspberry has got it up over the top of those thimbleberries, hand and foot. And then he goes on to say, quite common around the area, what looks like a standard brush has green berries that turn red-blue / almost black, quite a bit of them this time of year. And there he's talking about a plant we call spikenard. And spikenard is amazing because it grows from a root, so it's perennial, but it has this deep sort of brown, almost purplish stem, and the plant gets quite large. I've seen them 4 or 5 feet tall, and all of this growth, quite spreading, all of this growth occurs in 1 year. So they come up from the ground and they grow a very large plant. And not only a large plant, but they put out these clusters of berries, as Mark described them. They're green this time of year. Actually, they're beginning to transition from green to sort of reddish, and then some will get quite purple when they're ripe. And they're edible. They make a pretty good syrup, though I've not had them any other way. I have had spikenard syrup. So I encourage you to go out and look for them. And then then we had this little conversation. When I got back to my place, I found what looked like a dog scat on a log tree stump. I saw it on the ground and would have guessed it. If I had seen it on the ground, I had guessed it come from a fox to a small to medium dog. It was white, dried out. And then he goes, or is it some insect or plant thing, something regurgitated? It turned out to be scat, and I didn't recognize it right away. I thought that it probably wasn't a canid. What I sent to him in an email was, it doesn't look like a canid. I can't imagine a dog or a wolf or a coyote doing something like that. Well, it turns out that foxes do that. They climb up and leave a scat on the top of a stump as a scent post, as a marking post. And the other thing that helped to identify it as a fox scat is that it was kind of tapered at both ends. And so we had quite a go-around, Mark and I, with lots of discoveries out there. So it was a pretty interesting day. And then from our good friend Dallas over in Akeley, he says, 8-8 bulblet-bearing water hemlock is blooming on the 8th. On the 9th, water marigold and willow herb blooming. On the 11th, rattlesnake root and sweet everlasting are blooming, purplish copper and saffron-winged meadowhawk. The purplish copper is a butterfly, and the saffron-winged meadowhawk is a dragonfly. And the meadowhawks are starting to be the predominant dragonfly that we're seeing out there right now. They're small. The females are kind of golden-colored, maybe a little bit more like copper or bronze. And the males are bright red, and there are several different styles of meadowhawk that you'll see. The white face, the saffron-winged, seems like there's another one with yellow legs or something like that. So a bunch of different meadowhawks, and they will persist. They will be the active dragonflies right through the fall. And even on one of those really warm early November days, you might see one of the meadowhawks out flying around. He goes on to say, it's been an interesting butterfly year, more of what I didn't have than what I did. No cloudy wings, no northern cloudy wings, no hair streaks of any kind. Last year, I only had a coral hair streak. John Weber said he never saw a striped or banded coral wing anywhere. In the state this year, I also had no bronze coppers and only one purplish copper. What this means for future years is yet to be seen, but I am sure missing the hair streaks and coppers will most likely be the least number of species in a year in a year since I have started keeping records. So a little bit of dire news there about some of the butterflies. And he and John Weber, the other fellow mentioned there, Dallas and John Weber, are probably two of the premier lepidopterists in northern Minnesota. They definitely get out there and they know their stuff. So if Dallas says they're not showing up, you can bet that it wasn't for lack of effort on their part to try and find them. Ed Dallas called, the other Dallas in our cabal. He just came back from a 420-mile bike ride across the state of North Dakota. He said that sleeping in a small tent in the middle of desolate North Dakota and hearing coyotes call was enough to disrupt the sleep for a while. And then I can't imagine if I had ridden even, a tenth of the 420 miles that he went, I would sleep right through a coyote sitting on my chest and howling. Anyway, he also noted down in his neighborhood around Deerwood that the maples have begun to fleck, and we'll be talking about that more on the Phenology Show. Hummers are still active at his feeders, and he's still got a few orioles around. He mentioned the trumpeter swans had returned to his little lake there along right in front of his place. And I had just finished reading an article about trumpeter swans in the Minnesota Conservation Volunteer. And as of 2015, the population of trumpeters, 17,000 birds. So a wonderful recovery story. And if you're looking at the Minnesota Conservation Volunteer, check out the story on swans. That's our talkback show for today. By all means, if you have observations, comments, or questions, send them along. We love to hear from you.